this is Susie from Minya Shoes Ministries. It is my pleasure to present to you a new episode of The Next Step with Father Vazgen. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're tuning in. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. The Next Step is the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. Our seventh season is well underway, inspired by our spiritual pilgrimage to both sides of Mount Ararat. Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on Christ's principles of love, faith, and hope. At epostle.net, we reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. We produce these shows free of charge and make them available for download at epostle.net, as well as via multiple podcatchers, including Apple iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, and our very own epostle app. You can also subscribe to receive email notifications every time a new episode is released. However you choose to tune in, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazgen, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, episode number 346 of The Next Step, a podcast, well, that takes you all over the place. It connects the dots between the ancient and the contemporary, between the spiritual, the emotional, and the physical. In fact, while we're connecting dots, we look at the very fabric of those dots, our being, through the most ancient of all Christian traditions, namely Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up for today. This Armodox look is yours for the taking. Mine too, you know. And if you're ready to take it, I know I am. Let's take the next step. So good to have you with us today. I want to start off by telling you something that I didn't say in the introduction. I usually do. I say that this is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission. And I wanted to take some time to emphasize that today, because as I got into the studio, I was ready to start this podcast, and I had a quick visit. It was an appointment that was made, and I was looking forward to a very short visit. Actually, it turned out to be longer than I thought, but it was so enlightening for me. It was somebody who was asking questions about In His Shoes and commenting about the website. But it occurred to me that a lot of times when we talk about the In His Shoes mission, we're talking at a level that most next steppers understand because you've been through the steps. If you haven't been through the baby steps, it's hard to envision that this really is Christianity full blown out. That yes, In His Shoes is really the expression of Christianity. It's walking in the shoes of others, which Christ demands us to do. He says, you're going to love one another. Well, how do you love people? How do you express that love? How do you come to that full understanding of love if you first don't understand and respect the person that you're loving? We talk about loving our enemies. Is that really possible? Well, probably not. Unless you understood that your enemy is really like a reflection of yourself. Ah, now that's a pretty difficult concept, isn't it? Yeah, well, we don't shy away from those difficult concepts here on The Next Step, and I hope to get to it in a few moments. First of all, I wanted to start off with a rather personal reflection. One of the more difficult concepts in life is departure. It's, of course, death and dealing with that death. Of course, as a Christian, you believe in eternity, you believe in life after death, but still there is the concept of longing, of sadness, of sorrow, because you realize that you're separated from a person physically. And that physical emotion, that physical bond, is such a strong bond that sometimes we minimize it by talking about the spiritual, but the physical is so important. It is part of who we are. We are physical beings, and there are physical attractions and emotions that go along with it. This week, we suffered a physical loss. We lost a great musician and, to me, a personal friend. His name, Johnny Bilezikjian. You've heard him here on The Next Step. I've played many times his music. He was an artist on the oud. And in a few moments, I'll play a song that he's shared with us. His whole life was a life of sharing, and I wanted to do a little bit of personal reflection. I had a beautiful chance to talk with his dear wife, Helen, after his passing. And next week, there's going to be a memorial tribute to the Hularga Vorotyun, what is known as the Armenian funeral service. I like to say it in Armenian because it is so much more meaningful. Hularga Vorotyun means sending the soul back to its maker. It's Uhargel, to send. It's not a finality, but it's a continuation of life. And that's what we're going to be doing at the service. But to our Next Step listeners, who are probably distantly removed from him, but still have enjoyed his music through the years. I've played many of his songs and some of my personal favorites. Here was a man who really shared that talent that God had given him. About 25 years ago, when my father passed away, I'll never forget, John Bilezikchian was a musician. My dad was a musician. He was a pharmacist by trade. He was a pharmacist because that's where his education was. But there was a side of him. He was a self-taught musician. He played all kinds of music. And if you look at the show notes today, there's a picture. That's a picture. It's from our room. We have a room that's dedicated to music. Most of those instruments that you see there are left over from my dad. It left him over. But he was one of the people who had been influential in John Bilezikchian's life. So much so that when my dad passed away 25 years ago, John Bilezikchian, who lived in Southern California, and we were living in Northern California, he just picked up and he came and visited us in Northern California at the St. Andrew Armenian Church. And he organized a concert, a benefit, in memory of my dad. And I'll never forget that, because he played that night and we danced and we sang and we celebrated that night. And I think that that celebration is something that needs to go on whenever a talent like Johnny is lost. Because, you know, when St. Paul talks about love, he says, love can never end. Well, you think about that love. We think about it in terms of, well, what we know, right? The erotic love. We think about the filial love that we have towards our brothers. We think about the agape love that God has for us. But there is also other types of love, as I'm always reminded. And that type of love for talent, for art, for aesthetic beauty, is something that we need to celebrate. It cannot die. It cannot die. And I remember Johnny all the time, whenever we'd go and listen to him. And, you know, while we were dating, my wife and I were dating, or even afterwards. So, see, right after we dated, we got married. And that's what usually you do right after dating, right? We headed up to Northern California. So we were kind of removed from the Los Angeles scene, the Southern California scene, where Johnny would play a lot of times. But we'd always be in touch through the years, and many times he'd be at an event, at a party that we'd be at, and we'd always talk, and he'd always remind me of my dad's love for music and how my dad was so important in his life. And today I sit back and I think about how important Johnny was in our lives. He played a music. The oud is the grandfather to the guitar, to today's guitar, okay? So Jimi Hendrix, watch out. You know, this is where it started. It started off on the oud. And if you look at the oud, it's this really large body, and it's got this really tiny neck where you have to put together all of your music on this small little neck. And you've got an assortment of strings vibrating at different reverberations. And you're putting together some songs. You're putting together some music. And you've got to do that in this small space. And the talent is really not about putting together the songs, but about putting together so much detail in those songs. And this is really one thing that I would really go crazy about when I listen to Johnny playing. In fact, I got to tell you a story. Several years ago, I was invited to be on the Armenian Telethon. And this is an annual event that takes place around Thanksgiving. And I was on the road with my son. We were going to the studio to take part in the telethon. And we were listening. We were watching, actually, on TV. And then I forgot my time was at something like 10 o'clock or something. So around 9 o'clock, we're heading out to the studio. And we're listening to it on the radio. Yeah, that's back in the old days, you know. Before internet, there was radio. Yeah, remember that? You'd press the button and anyway, we were in the car and we were listening to the radio and Johnny was playing. Johnny was playing at that portion. He was playing Malinguena. And I'll never forget this. I'm talking with my son, Vaderjan, who is a musician himself. And we were talking about it. And I said, Vaderjan, how does he do that? He was actually strumming chords, notes and chords, picking at the strings while he was strumming chords. It was beyond what you could imagine. And so in my head, I thought that this was probably a recording with some overdubs, with some samplings. Okay? Like, how is it possible that one man could play chords and pick notes at the same time? It must have been something beyond what is physically possible. And we got to the studio just in time to watch his exit. But it was enough time for us to watch him while he was still performing. And he was doing it. He was actually doing it. It was a magic that I can't even explain, that there aren't even words to explain. It is the magic of his artistry, of being able to play those chords and pluck those notes in such a way that the music became alive. It was drawing us in there. And when I say that love cannot end, this is what I'm talking about. His love for that music, for that instrument, for his talent to give back what God had given us was so great that he actually was sharing that in a way that an instrument, that a music became alive. And it touched us. It touched us at that moment. And here I am, some 20 years later, well, 15 years later since that broadcast probably, talking about it and sharing it with you, my listeners. And I hope that you, the listeners, will get a little taste of what Johnny was all about. Describe that. Magical. Incredible, huh? You know what? I'm going to put a link to his website on today's show notes. Do check it out. Do check out his music. It's incredible. Try to check out some of the videos, too, that are up there. It is, he had Dunn's Records, which I always thought was, I never talked to him about this, but I guarantee you that it was probably a takeoff on the Beatles putting off the Apple Music label. Yeah, there used to be Apple Records. There still is, but used to be more prominent when you had those big old, big old records with that big apple in the middle of it. John had Dunn's Records, and that is the name of his website. He is on the website. It says he is America's oud virtuoso. Billy Zichin may be the most prominent oudist of his generation. He's the master oudist who has elevated this instrument to the concert stage, as well as continues to perform as a folk musician. He's appeared with the Los Angeles Philharmonic under the baton of Maestro Zubin Mehta, and as well as the Los Angeles Mandolin Orchestra and the Pacific Palisades Symphony with Maestro Joel Lisch. So there's a lot of, there is so much history to Johnny in the relatively, I want to say short life, but it was a very full life, one that touched us in many, many ways. So here is a small sampling of the oud artistry of John Billy Zichin, which I offer as today's Song of the Day in Memoriam. John Billy Zichin passed away this week, 2015, but his music lives on as he does live on, a man of faith, a man of love and man of passion. The words of St. Paul, love never dies. John will not die. He continues to live on in his music and all the goodness that he shared with humanity. May God rest his soul. Well, as I shared with you a few moments ago, I do want to talk to you a little bit about In His Shoes and where we're at today, because over the past week, we had an opportunity to really experience a lot of different emotions, as well as a lot of different events. I was up in the Bay Area last Friday, Saturday, had a chance to meet with some very dear friends and supporters, Janine and Nicholas Economides. We were together for a brief coffee break and talked a little bit about where we're headed, what we're doing. And it's always great to meet with people who get it, you know, who understand that, you know, church is more than lighting a candle, but it's about living that faith. And as I've shared with you many times, Janine does a daily blog, which I encourage you to just check out, because they are addicting in a sense. You know, you kind of get pulled into it and you say, okay, what's she going to write about today? And they are really beautiful and very spiritually uplifting, deep thoughts that she shares with people. And I'll put a link on today's show notes. I had a chance to see her. We were up in St. Andrew Armenian Church in Cupertino, a very special parish to me, my first parish. And we were able to visit with some old friends. We had the passing of Mike Kazarian. We were over there for his funeral service, his Hugarga Vorutyun, and got a chance to meet with friends. And, you know, that's conjure up a lot of emotions in you, obviously. And then the Sunday, we had our annual In His Shoes Martin Luther King Day event. And this throughout the years has taken on many, many different many manifestations. The ramifications have been intense, but many manifestations. We've done retreats at many of these weekends. We've done events. We've done gatherings, drum circles. One of them, we actually went to a blues club, and we had the House of Blues, it was called, and we had a gospel breakfast. Yes! Yes, your Deadhide, your Father Voskin, took off on that Sunday and attended a gospel revival. It was wild. I won't share with you everything that happened that day, but it was a really wild way to share in that Martin Luther King weekend. But this time, what we did is we went out and we saw the movie Selma. And if you haven't seen it, please do. I shared with you last week that we were going to go do it, and I asked you if you have a chance to see it, do see it. So I'm assuming that some of you took me up on that offer and did see the movie. If you haven't, please do see it. It is, first of all, very effective. It is very moving, and it is an important reminder of where we are as a community. A lot of times when you hear about the intolerance that takes place in the world, you forget about the level of intolerance that was around right in the civilized societies, which we call some of the great countries or the first world countries, right? We always talk about the third world as this oppressed place, but you got to remember that the first world where we're at right now, that first world country is not what we are right now without the growing pains. I shared with you some thoughts that Herbie Hancock had shared with me a few weeks ago. He was talking about blues musician and about slavery, how it gave the rise to blues music, and from that blues we've got we've got all modern music, ramifications of that music. There, I used it in the right sense. But we forget that also as a society we have gone through so much. It may not have been slavery, but there was definitely oppression. There was definitely discrimination, and to such an intense level. And here was Dr. King, who was fighting it with the tools that he was vested with the tools, much like I said a few minutes ago, the talent that Billy Zekchin had, in the same way Dr. King had that talent, and he was sharing it with the world, sharing this message of nonviolence that was given to him from our Lord Jesus Christ. And I enjoyed the movie. It wasn't too much spiritual. I wish they had maybe centered a little bit more and focused more about his passion as a minister. But I did share with you last week some of the writings that he had shared with the world. And I want to continue in that vein, because Selma really did bring out a lot of that struggle, that inner struggle that Dr. King had. How do you effectuate change when the tools that the world is talking about are not the tools that you have? And it's basically some of the struggle that we go through when I talk about In His Shoes. When I look out at the world, you know, in a few months, we're going to be commemorating the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide. Now, this is probably the most heinous way of articulating violence, genocide, the annihilation of an entire people. Now, in talking about that, how do you talk about such an event not to incite more hatred? Like, you tell people about these heinous crimes, but in so doing, are you inciting more hatred? Hatred for the perpetrator. A few years back, I was invited to Rwanda, and I had a chance to meet with people who were only 10 years removed from genocide. And it was an interesting parallel for me with the Armenian Genocide. Because unlike the Armenians, who were thrown out of their country, these Rwandans had to stay in their country. So basically, they had to exist with the perpetrators of the genocide. So unlike the Armenians, who were outside in a diaspora, these people were every day. You'd go to the grocery store, you'd go to the laundromat, and you'd see somebody who was on the other side, quote unquote. He was a Rwandan. But he was on the other side. We may have ran across somebody who killed your family, who raped your mother. And in fact, I did meet such a man, who actually had to live in the same community as the man who raped his mother. And he was a witness to that. And yet had to come to terms with that, because he had to realize that if he was going to live and exist in this society, he had to go beyond the usual markings of repaying violence with violence. And it's an important discussion that we have right now in terms of In His Shoes as well. Because at the same weekend that we saw Selma, there was another movie that came out. It was called American Sniper. Now, I have to admit that I haven't seen it, but it broke all kinds of records because, you know, it was the movie of choice for that weekend. Broke records in terms of ticket sales. Now, what is being presented? Of course, there is violence. There is a sniper out there who is out there in the middle of war. But so many of the icons of the metaphors, so much of how we understand our life is given to us by these reflections of life. I mean, think about it, the movies, the music, they reflect life, right? They're art reflecting life. But how much of life is reflected by those movies? The scenarios. I don't want to be grandstanding here and saying that, okay, you know, we're all messed up because of what the movies are doing to us. But, you know, there's something to be said about the level of violence. You go to a movie, and if there's a little bit of nudity in the movie, it gets an R rating. You know, we call this vulgar because a body is shown. And yet, you know, you see somebody get his head blasted off. You see somebody dying and be violently killed, and that gets a PG or maybe a PG-13 rating. Case in point was Selma, right in front of us. We saw the four children. They were killed, exploded. And yet, this is one more piece of violence. And I'm not going to go that route of talking about glamorizing violence, but I'm talking about the desensitization process. Because, you know, you get to a point where all of a sudden you become numb to what's happening. I remember one of the popular movies that was out, I would say, when I was probably in my late teens, early 20s. It was called Dawn of the Dead. It was one of those zombie flicks. And now they're pretty prevalent. Back in those times, there was only a couple of them. One was Night of the Living Dead, and the other one was Dawn of the Dead. And I remember going to Dawn of the Dead on a few occasions. And one time, to the scorn of my grandmother, who was so upset with me for taking my little brother or my little sister with me. Because we would go there and we'd watch them. Wow, the whole head would explode. You know, you'd kill them. The only way to kill these zombies was to decapitate them. And you'd watch these movies. And at some point, you realize that it is just a movie. Yeah, it's just a movie. But at some point, it gets to a place where you're desensitized. Okay, so the first time you see somebody get exploded, killed, decapitated, you're in shock. It's horror. But at some point, you get desensitized to it. And it's just, well, it's just a movie. Yeah, it's just a person. Yeah, well, you know that he's going to appear. If that character on that film was killed, you know that next year he'll be the star of the next show, you know? And so you know that he comes back to life. Growing up, think about cartoons. I haven't watched cartoons in a long time. I gave up after the Roadrunner and Bugs Bunny were taken off. But think about the Roadrunner. You know, the poor coyote. He'd be going through the desert and all of a sudden an anvil would fall on his head. He would fall the distance of a canyon. And he'd come back out. Right? You're desensitized all of a sudden, right? Well, you know the coyote's going to get it. The Roadrunner always gets him in the end, right? Poor coyote, all he's trying to do is catch a meal. But the Roadrunner has one over him, right? But at some point, you realize the coyote's going to come back. It's not like he's killing the coyote. You know, this huge anvil comes out from the top and it pulverizes the coyote. Or a box of Acme TNT, dynamite, is put there. And the coyote explodes. And you know he's back. Well, this kind of desensitization was then, it became part of the parody. Remember in Simpsons, they came out with the Itchy and Scratchy show. It was taking it to the ultimate. Okay, well, they were making a joke about it. You know, this is what we like to watch. You know, this cat who gets his brains blown out, his eyes blown out, but then you know that he comes back. Well, think about that for a moment. What happens to the psyche? What happens to our respect for life? And I'm scared talking in this way because a lot of times, you know, we get accused, especially within the religious community, of talking beyond ourselves. But there is something that is going on. Last week in Gyumri, a very small population, comparatively speaking, but it is the second largest city in the Republic of Armenia. A Russian soldier goes into a house and kills six people, kills a whole family, kills them, shoots them, stabs them, and kills them. And now you're stuck with that carnage. You're stuck with answers. And Armenia, God bless them, Gyumri has gone through so much in the past several years. In fact, last summer I was out in Gyumri, and one of the things that I noticed was right next to the church is this huge dome. The dome of the church is left outside the church. This dome fell over in the 1988 earthquake. And instead of them cleaning it up, they've kept it. They've preserved it. They have it standing right next to the church as a monument, so to speak, for us to reflect on and remember that such a devastating earthquake did take place over there. Now, in that reminder, we're also reminded that 25,000 lives were taken in the course of a few minutes as that earthquake rolled through Armenia. And now here it is in that same small town. You've got this family that has been annihilated because of the whims of one man. And I know during the past week, couple weeks, people have been saying, why? Well, what is that question, why? What do we need to know? It's happened. Desensitized to life. And so what we try to do here at In His Shoes is really bring that sensitivity back. And that's what In His Shoes is about. That's what I want to share with you these last few moments of this program today. You know, we're embarking on a big, big project, the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide. It's very easy for us to talk about the negativity. Obviously, genocide is the ultimate negativity, right? The most heinous way of annihilation, killing off everybody who belongs to a certain ethnic group. And that's what the Armenian Genocide was. But as we talk about it, it's important that we don't foster new images of hatred, that we sensitize ourselves to the pain of others. And that's what In His Shoes is about. It's that sensitivity training to understand that life is not understood by the boundaries that we put up, by the delineations that we put up, but is understood as one beautiful thing that has been given to us by God. And all life is sacred. All life is precious. It's always amazing to me how people, especially in the religious world, will get on the bandwagon to talk about abortion. How negative it is. Of course, it's horrible, abortion. But at the same time, are we willing to talk about the inmates on death row? Yes, that's not a pretty life over there. We don't want to think about these people. But isn't that a life too? And what about the lives of families? What about the homelessness that is out in our streets? What about the sick people? What about the mentally disturbed people? Aren't those lives precious as well? Can we find some goodness in all life? And when we talk about walking in His shoes, that's what it's about. It's understanding the pain of others, understanding that our only hope in this life is for us to have that understanding towards one another. And so the invitation, as I said earlier today, this program, the next step, is really about moving in that direction. Can we find the reality of Christian existence? Can we understand that really Christianity is walking in the shoes of others? Christianity is not about some kind of philosophy. It is not about some end-time religion. It's not about a life to come. Christianity is about the Christ-centeredness of our lives and finding the Christ in all lives, understanding that all life is chrismated, in other words, is ordained as sacred. Now that's a big order, because a lot of times you will see life and you'll say, there's no way that's ordained. You'll see the heinous crimes that people commit and you say, how could that guy do something like that? That man is not fit to live. That man is not fit to be called a human being. So let's expel them. And that's the easy way out. You see, a lot of times when I said earlier that reflection in the mirror, we have to understand that we also are part of the equation of what's going on in the world. And this is a big one. I said a few minutes ago that this is a tough experience to understand that we are part of the problem. It's not an easy one, but it means looking at the mirror and seeing that, yes, If there is genocide, maybe we are the ones who are contributing to a future genocide, unless we are ready to change. Christ's commandment to repent is about this, that willingness to change from our ways. You know, we get on these bandwagons and we start talking about this person doing that, and it's so easy to become critical. But don't forget, Christ was critical because he could be. In the perfect state of this God-man, who was standing there looking on at the world, in his perfection, he could look at life and say that, yes, you are a hypocrite. We do not have that right to look at another person and say you are a hypocrite because we are living in that hypocrisy. Yes, each of us. Are we perfect? And that's why Jesus says emphatically so many times, he says, before you see the speck in your brother's eye, remove the log that's within your own eye. And that's the invitation to change. That's the invitation that you and I have. It's given to all of us. That before we start looking at the rest of the world and saying, this man has a problem, this woman has a problem, let's look at ourselves and say, there is a log in my eye which prevents me from seeing the beauty of God's world. Let me remove that log first so I could see it better. I could see the world better. In his shoes is that expression. It's the expression of saying, first, let me understand your pain. Before I talk about you, before I do anything else, let me carry your burden. Let me walk in your shoes. And in so doing, let me understand you so that I can love you. I shared with you last week, the week before, about this idea of 100 souls in his shoes. I'm looking for April 24th this year, and I'm counting on all of you as Next Step listeners to become part of the solution. It's very easy to talk about history. In fact, it's a no-brainer. History is a matter of fact. There is a fact that a genocide did happen. You can't dispute that. It happened. There's documentation. There are people like me who've lived with survivors, who've heard the stories. There's countless books. There are people all over the place who are documenting it today by saying these events happened. Okay, let's get beyond that. It did happen. There's no question about it. Now, what do we do with the reality? We can either sulk. We can either look back and say, why did this happen? We can look for the why question. Or we can say that I am part of the solution. By understanding the pain of others, I may have been the first person to go through genocide, to go through such pain, but I'm not the last person. There are people who are suffering today, and I'm going to be an instrument of that peace and understanding. I'm going to walk in his shoes. And so the invitation to 100 souls is an invitation that I'm throwing out. I'm asking you, get in touch with me. Get in touch with In His Shoes. Go to our website, inhisshoes.org. Check out the events. Check out what's going on. Become part of the conversation and a part of the solution. We're looking for people who are bold enough to say that homelessness is something we want to address. People for us to wake up today and say that there are problems happening in Darfur that we need to address. We're looking for people who are going to say that Syria is something that we cannot forget and we need to help out people over there. We need people who are going to look out and see the poverty that's inside of the world and see that if not but for the grace of God, there go I. That is me. That is my reflection that I see in the face of my brothers, because the reflection that I see in them has the image of Christ. It is my image that I see there. And if Christ is in me, I have to see that Christ in my brothers and sisters. In his shoes. We're walking 100 souls in his shoes. I'm asking you to take that courageous walk. This morning, I had a visitor who came and shared with me some ideas about our website. And in the conversation, she said that, you know, you're talking about In His Shoes, but we need to talk about the basics. Can you tell me about Christ? Can you tell me about God? And it was a good wake-up call for me, because a lot of times we get on this bandwagon and we start talking about In His Shoes, but it is really a higher level of understanding Christianity. But do you need that necessary foundation? Absolutely. Who was Jesus Christ? How did he come into this world? How did he conquer this world? And how is his message a message that is for the living? That's what we hope to do. That's what we are all called to do. The message of Christ is a simple one. God so loved the world. He loved and cared about us so much that he gave us the very best, his Son, so that we can all have life and have that life abundantly. Have a beautiful life. Share in the beauty that God has created us to enjoy. I'm asking you to get involved. This is what In His Shoes is all about. This is where we start off. And in the weeks to come, we may be going back to the bare roots, but I hope that along the way, you look at the archives that we've left here on the Apostle Network, that throughout our programming, throughout our shows, this message is one that keeps coming back to us, that is the reverberation that is sent out and keeps being heard. With that, I want to take a break now. Let Susan make her announcement. I'll be back in a couple minutes.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie. An important reminder that these programs, this ministry, is supported through your prayers and donations. This is an important year. It's a pivotal year. It's a 100-year anniversary. Got to tell you something that happened last night. I was to the shame of clergy, and I won't even mention names or rank, but it was a clergyman who got up and said that it behooves us on April 23rd to be at the Divine Liturgy, at the Holy Badarak, in Mass, because after all, this is the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide. I just sat there and listened, and I said, can this be happening in my presence to a high-ranking clergyman like this, talking like this? No. Don't go to a Divine Liturgy because it's the 100th anniversary. Go to it because the body and blood of Jesus Christ is being presented. Because you have the opportunity to have Christ in your midst. That's the reason why you go and fill up a church. You don't fill it up because people have died. And this message has to resound. It is the only message that makes sense. When the more I get involved, the more I hear about some of these things that are going out there, the more I'm shying away from the organization. And I understand that what we have here as Armadoxy is really the answer, because you cannot be talking about these terms about Christ in the institutional sense. Yes, the institution is important, but I think today one of the big proponents of what we're talking about, Pope Francis, is really showing that. He's saying it's beyond the institution. It's about that message of humility and love. And that's what we've been doing for the past 7 years here on The Next Step, for the past 30 years in our ministry, for the past 13 years through In His Shoes. It's about the message of Christ, about loving, about having compassion, about caring. And if you believe it, please do get involved. Get on the website. get in correspondence with us, drop us an email, feedback@epostle.net. It's a quick way to get in touch with us. Pick up the phone, call us, 626-275-AMEN. Yeah, special number. Get in touch with us. Get in touch with us on Facebook. And let your voice be heard. Share it with other people. Share our links. Tell people what you found. Tell them the beauty that's out there. It's the message of Christ. Walking in his shoes. Each of us becoming those ambassadors of Christ in our lives. There is so much that is going on in our lives and I can't share with you every single piece, but I do want to. Believe it or not, I go through the week saying, oh, I got to share this with my listeners. You are such an incredible audience out there. I love sharing everything with you, and I wish I had more time to do it, but we're going to call it a day for today. Wrap it up, and we'll be back next week with some more thoughts. In the meantime, please join us at all the usual locations, inhisshoes.org, as well as Facebook. We all have accounts there. Get in touch with us. Do check out today's show notes. There'll be links to all kinds of stuff going on here and there. But in the meantime, I want to just remind you that we appreciate all of your love, all of your support, and especially all of your prayers. So until next week, on behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.